My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. I'll be with my friends just trying to make some money. My job is not just to entertain, but to educate and teach you. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. The hatred for this market, okay, it knows no bounds. And I can't blame the haters. Every time you get comfortable, someone pulls the rug out from under you, which is how you get a not-so-hot day like today, where the Dow slips 177 points, S&P declined 0.75%, NASDAQ lost 0.72%. Part of the big rally last week came from the financials. How great was that to see? Specifically, the terrific comments made by Jamie Dimon, the CEO of J.P. Morgan. He talked up the consumer. How is banks doing well in this environment where the Fed's rate hikes should make that company more instantly profitable? It sounded fantastic! Then today, Dimon talked about how an economic hurricane could be coming our way. So we all better brace for the disaster. What the heck happened to the halcyon era for the banks he mentioned a week ago? Did the sunshine turn to gale force winds and treacherous rain in just a few days? I think he crushed the market with his comments. He giveth and he taketh away. Whatever the reason, when CEOs are painting such an inconsistent picture, you end up with a market like this one that moves in fits and starts with aggravating ups and downs. They actually left the S&P 500 basically flat for the month of May. Oh, it's very easy to hate this one, especially if you're playing the ruinous game that so many younger investors turned out to be playing. We all know the classic examples, meme stocks like AMC, the movie theater chain that was at $62 last year, $62, but now trades at $12 after a brief blip up to $16 just yesterday on the strength of Top Gun 2 box office numbers. The run in AMC was spearheaded by CEO Adam Aron, who remains predictably positive on the stock. It certainly is right. It's been his right the whole way down. Darn thing took a 10% hit today. Or how about this? Let's just think of some of these. Let's just, you know, look at the parade of horribles here. How about GoodRx? There's a good one, right? GoodRx, we had them on a bunch of times. Prescription drug discount app. It traded at $47 back in October of last year. And now while it's $7, Teladoc, which has fallen from $154 last November, $32 now. Oh, how about, let's throw in Carvana, used car retailer. Seen its stock plunge from $370 last August to $26 today? Don't forget the electric vehicle cohort. Lucid's gone from 55 to 19. Rivian's plummeted from 172 to 30. Fisker's fallen from 23 to 10. By comparison, Tesla's been a trooper, but even that sunk from the 1200s to the 700s. Then there are disastrous battery and charging station stocks. QuantumScape, 40 to 11. EVgo, 19 to 9. ChargePoint, 35 to 12. Don't forget the revolutionary stocks. Roblox is going to disrupt the entire gaming ecosystem. 134 to 29. UiPath was going to automate office jobs, fall from 81 to 16, although it's jumping after hours and wake up a better than fear quarter. Finally, there's fashion. Stitch Fix from 66 to 8. Rent the Runway from 19 to 4. Poshmark, 51 to 10. Ignominious Real Real, 22 to 3. Allbirds, 29 to 5. Warby Parker, 60 to 16. So what distinguishes these companies, aside from their disastrous performance and the fact that almost all of them lose money? Simple. These stocks are where the pain is really concentrated in this market. Because in many cases, they have almost nothing to fall back on. There's no buybacks to buoy them when they're down. Instead, they're often serial issuers of their own stock. There are no dividends, something a growth-obsessed buyer who used to love these things looked down on because they're for old people. Those are old people's stocks. There's no sponsorship to speak of. Nobody, any brokers from a repute that can really pound the table on them. Instead, we just see endless price target cuts, one after another. But most of all, these beaten down names represent a fundamental misunderstanding of how you should manage your money. I spend a huge amount of time analyzing just these kinds of situations with the CNBC Investing Club as we go over our holdings in the charitable trust. Oh, we do it pretty brutally. We hold ourselves responsible, as you'll see if you join in when we host our monthly virtual meeting tomorrow at noon. So let's go over what's going wrong here, because that's the only way we can learn from the colossal losses these broken momentum stocks all generate. First, when you take this kind of loss, you can't despair so much that you give up on the stocks as an asset class. Because what happened here is people really did start with a very fine premise. They liked the company. They liked it enough so they bought the shares. They were all birds and thought, oh, how cool. They could own the stock. They rented the runway, saved a ton of money by not buying a dress. They used their cell phones to speak with doctors and loved not having to go in person. They wanted to support electric vehicle makers. Who doesn't want to find the next Tesla? Why not back the safest, most child-friendly gaming platform in the world with Roblox? You know what? That's a terrific starting point. But the problem is the homework, or in this case, the lack thereof. Why don't you invest in something like, that's terrific, but you also have to know the financials. How the company's doing? Is it losing gobs of money? Does it have enough capital to last? Does it have a path to profitability? If you don't ask these questions, you're asking for trouble. It's only a good place to start. Then you have to ask yourself, do these companies have the fuel to themselves? There turns out to be so many charging station and battery investments and electric vehicles that no one can break through or stand out in particular or stand out before the money runs out. There's so many competitors to Allbirds and so many copycats to Rent the Runway or Teladoc that there's no moat to their businesses. And most important, when these companies are all collateral damage from what the Fed has to do to tamp down inflation, it's unnerving and you don't see it coming. The Fed's cutting off the easy money that helped create to save us. It helped create to save us from a COVID-related meltdown. That was right. But because they printed so much money, everybody could get financing. And you end up with a situation where just about anything could come public. That's inflationary. There was no governor in the system. Certainly not the brokers who made billions of dollars off these deals. Off you. Even as the stocks have imploded in the last 6 months. Which brings me all the way back to Jamie Dimon's weather report. What he's saying when he talks about a hurricane is the inability of the Fed to crush inflation without also crushing the economy. I want you to imagine a hurricane hitting a coastal area. What else do you want to be in? One that's shielded by a big profit stream with a fortress balance sheet, not to mention dividend or a buyback? Or one that's just an idea or an unprofitable product that happens to have a stock connected to it that you got trapped in? Oh, hey, look, I'm not against growth. I love growth. Last night, I talked about how Amazon, Alphabet, and Meta platforms, formerly known as Facebook, have great balance sheets, fairly consistent growth, and big moats. I know now, for instance, that many of you are worried about the future of Meta now that longtime chief operating officer Sheryl Sandberg announced her resignation from that post today. Now, I know when I spoke to her tonight, I was concerned about the vacuum she might cause after working there for 14 years. And is CEO Mark Zuckerberg's longtime co-leader going to take the whole business with her? I mean, she was really part of the whole growth and prosperity. No, that's not going to be the case. She reassured me about the company's big bench and that time was right for her to focus on philanthropy. Strong companies like Meta will weather the storm, and their stock should be bought on this weakness. Although I have to admit, I will miss Sandberg's tireless effort to steer the company toward helping small businesses prevail, especially during the pandemic. But buy this stock on this weakness. I will say that again tomorrow. I will say it for weeks, months, years. In the end, the new class of disappointed investors needs to start over, this time with an understanding that a product you like doesn't always make for a fantastic investment. As I tell Investment Club members all the time, there's a right way and a wrong way. Doing the homework about the underlying company and knowing how the economy might impact it, that's often more important than whether you like the product. The bottom line, if you don't know how the companies you own shares in will survive an economic hurricane or even a Fed tightening or two, then just use the product. But don't own, as Leon Trotsky would say, the means of production. Kelly in Minnesota. Kelly!
Hi, Jim. How are you?
I am good, Kelly. Good to hear from you.
Great. Listen, I want to thank Nicole for taking my call. She's great. You've got a great staff.
Nicole is terrific, has a smile, works hard, makes us all happy. What's going on?
So I'm newer to investing the last few years, and I've been learning a lot, reading a lot, and January came, and I was like, what am I doing in this market? My brother is very dedicated to you, watches you all the time. So I turned your show on, and everything you said was just making absolute sense. So I joined your investing club. I've been reworking our portfolios, but there's one stock that's just a thorn in my side, and I'm not sure if I probably should have got out of it sooner, but it's Fubo TV. I don't know if we just ride it out and stay long or cut a huge loss and reinvest.
But remember, it doesn't matter whether you take the loss or not. You have a loss. And I think you're going to get some gains. We're going to do some good stuff with the club. You'll have, and I think that what you ought to do is wait till the end of the year. And if you got those good gains, like I hope you have, you'll take the loss against it. That will be the plan. Okay, we're going to Dino in Minnesota. Dino.
Jimmy Chill, thank you very much for taking my call, man.
Quite welcome.
Hey, I took your advice a couple years ago back in April of 2020, bought the stock. Now I cashed out of it about 6 months ago, and it's back down to pandemic levels. Wondering what you think about Wayfair.
All right, so I'm so glad you asked me this call, Dino. These are great calls. Kelly, thank you for being in the investment club. Dino, listen to me. There's a company called Williams-Sonoma. It reported the same time as Wayfair. This company is on fire. It is doing every right. It's buying back its stock. It's run by a genius, Laura Albert. And it is all the way down, off 26%, down 2% today to 125. And that, my friend, is a...
Buy.
That's the furniture company you want. Now, if you don't know how the companies you own will do in an economic hurricane, thank you, Jamie Dimon, for that weather report, or even a Fed tightening, then just use the product, but don't own the stock. Hey, on Mad Money Tonight, you stumped me on a couple of lightning round stocks that I'm going to turn to my homework on two names that Cramerica has its eyes on. And oil and gas companies have reshaped their image. So is it time to embrace the change or just kick them out the door? I'm going to give you my oil manifesto. And Sentinel One reported top and bottom line beat for the quarter. And that was a quarter after reported at the bell. And I'm running through results with the CEO. So stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com. Or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
We got to take some time off last week. Market behaved itself, turning in its best performance since the week we found out the COVID vaccines were on the way, and that's all the way back in November 2020. But something else happened while we're on vacation. We got a chance to catch up with the homework. Catch our breath. I come out here every night to answer your questions. Sometimes there are stocks I simply don't know or haven't been following lately. But I always try to circle back for you because the whole point of this show is to help you to become a better investor. And that means taking your stock picks as seriously as I take picks for my own charitable trust, which we'll discuss when we convene our monthly investing club meeting tomorrow at noon. I do hope you will join the club and join us for that talk. So let's go right to it. Way back on April 20th, Shannon in Florida asked us about Atlantica Sustainable Infrastructure. That symbol is AY. This is a British company that owns a portfolio of energy infrastructure assets, mostly solar with some wind thrown in, although 15% of the business is efficient natural gas and heating, with another 12% being electric transmission assets. Mainly, though, Atlantica is a renewable energy play that's mainly focused on North America and Europe, although they also got this meaningful South African kicker. More importantly, Atlantica's sustainable infrastructure is a dividend play. They distribute a massive chunk of change to their shareholders that gives the stock a juicy 5.5% yield. Atlantica came public in the United States almost 8 years ago. In June of 2014, a horrible time for alternative energy because it was right before oil prices collapsed, making renewables a lot less attractive in comparison. Atlantica plunged from $40 in the first few months of its trading to a low of roughly $13 when oil finally bottomed in February of 2016. That was a tough run. Brutal. When oil's at $40 or $50 a barrel, wind and solar are a lot less competitive. Hey, but when oil's at $115 like it is now, it's a different story. Very different. Sure enough, when oil and natural gas started bouncing off their COVID lows 2 years ago, Atlantica stock made a fabulous comeback. But in the last 6 months, it's come uncoupled from fossil fuel prices. Like virtually every other alternative energy play, this one peaked last November. Fed, falling from $41 at its highs down to $32 today. And that's down slightly from where it was trading when Shannon asked us about it. And honestly, I think this pullback's absurd. The fact you can buy Atlantica down nearly 10 bucks from its peak is a gift. This is a good, solid business with solid production growth for renewable energy over the past 3 years, including a big jump in 2021. Just as important, the company's cash flow is steadily rising. And that translates directly into what we like best of Mad Money, higher dividends. In short, Atlantic is a real company that sells real stuff at a profit, returns those profits to shareholders while still having relatively cheap stock. It's exactly what we like in this high inflation environment where the Fed's slamming the brakes on the economy. I think a lot of investors have been reflexively just dumping the alternative energy plays, even though the good ones are very direct beneficiaries to sky-high oil and gas prices. And look, Atlantica gives you real protection with that dividend. Plus, we know the business is doing well because Atlantica just reported a solid quarter 3 weeks ago. They had 7% comparable revenue growth, yet the stock actually dropped 5% on the day the numbers came out, largely, I think, because early to mid-May was such a dark time for the market. Couldn't find any other reason why it went down. All things considered, I like this. Atlantica Sustainable Infrastructure is a good pick at these levels, in large part because I don't see it having much more downside. Meanwhile, they're paying you that to wait with a rebound, glorious 5.5% yield. Of course, there are other high-quality utilities with renewable energy kickers. You know I like American Electric Power. Dominion. This Sempra Energy is one of the great growth utilities of all time. But this one's much closer to pure play with a far more bountiful yield. You got my blessing. Buy it. That's, you know I don't do that easily on homework. Now, next up, May 17th, Mark, Wisconsin, called about a company called Digital Bridge. That's DBRG. Now, I'd only heard of it because they announced a deal to buy Switch last month, but otherwise I didn't know much about it. Hey, turns out there's a reason for that. Digital Bridge is a new name for an old business. It used to be known as Colony Capital before it rebranded roughly a year ago. The old Colony Capital was a REIT founded over 30 years ago by Tom Barrack, the real estate mogul and political donor, good friend of former President Trump. I've interviewed him many times. But last year, Barrack was charged with acting as an agent of a foreign government, obstruction of justice, and making false statements to federal law enforcement. Barrack got ousted last year, but the old Colony Capital started transforming itself well before his legal troubles. Back in 2019, they struck a deal to buy a digital infrastructure company called Digital Bridge, and they ultimately took that name. Before the deal, the company was 80% hotels, offices, warehouses, and retail. Now it's 70% digital assets like data centers, cell towers, and fiber network properties. For years, the stock was an underperformer, but in early 2021, the shift to digital infrastructure had given the stock a new lease on life. Then that former CEO got indicted for allegedly doing some illegal lobbying on behalf of the United Arab Emirates, and the stock spent the better part of the year stuck between 6 and 8. Lately, though, it's been hit along with the rest of the market, bottoming at $5.27 last month. Even after the fabulous market-wide rebound last week, Digital Bridge is still below $6. Where do I come down on this one? First, I do think Digital Bridge is heading the right direction. Relatively new CEO Mark Ganzi has a long history of investing in cell towers and data centers. To me, that's a much better business than hotels, offices, and retail right now. And they keep expanding the digital side of the business. They made a series of little acquisitions this year, buying some data centers from CyrusOne. Remember, we've had them on a bunch of times. Picking up a European cell tower outfit called Telenet. And, of course, there's the $11 billion Switch deal. Switch owns a portfolio of massive data centers. We've been watching that one since late last summer when the activist investors at Elliott Management announced that they'd taken a stake in the company. Looks like they convinced management to sell. However, while I believe Digital Bridge is making some good moves, that doesn't mean it's necessarily good for your portfolio. In part, that's because this thing is a very complicated corporate structure. But mainly, it's because Digital Bridge isn't that profitable at the moment. This is a market that prizes profitability above all else, as I say over and over again. Most importantly, though, you can get exposure to the same themes with some much more straightforward companies. You want cell towers? Hey, how about American Tower? Massively profitable company with a stock that's done nicely from its highs last year. It's down enough to be able to, I'd say, buy it. Want data centers? I like Equinix or Digital Realty, which is up a quick 7% since I highlighted as an accidental high yield just 2 weeks ago. Bottom line, after looking into both stories, you got my blessing right here to buy this Atlantica Sustainable Energy, Sustainable Infrastructure. What a good company. When it comes to Digital Bridge, what can I say? You got better options. Man Money's back after the break.
Coming up, powerful thoughts on oil and gas. Cramer's Energy Manifesto. Next.
Let's talk about oil. A few years ago, I told you the oil stocks were simply uninvestable because they had no discipline. Every time the price of crude went up, they'd drill like crazy. And just as important, and at times, yes, more important, their total indifference to the environment was turning them into corporate pariahs. I was starting to think they were like big tobacco. That's no longer the case. Obviously, there's still fossil fuel companies. They can't change the stripes like that. There's only so much they can improve when it comes to global warming. But the vast majority of these companies have proven to me without a doubt that they have made major strides toward becoming better corporate citizens, and they're actually investing heavily in a decarbonized future. Even Larry Fink, the head of ETF kingpin BlackRock, a man I most admire, and at one time maybe the most outspoken critic of fossil fuel producers, has come around on the importance of the group. Fink wants a net zero carbon world more than anyone I know in the big time investing world. But as he said in his recent letter to CEOs, the transition to net zero is already uneven, with different parts of the global economy moving at different speeds. It will not happen overnight. We need to pass through shades of brown to shades of green. Then he went on to talk about natural gas as a cleaner bridge fuel to a green renewable era, and even hydrogen-generated future, which is something I really hope so myself. See, his support, because he is a visionary, went a long way toward convincing me that rapid decarbonization is simply not viable as much as I favored. But none of that matters when it comes to the most powerful man in the world, and that's the President of the United States. Joe Biden seems to have it in for the oil companies, frankly, in a way that's unprecedented in modern American history, even as the companies themselves have finally gotten religion on climate change. Exxon's got a new board that's shockingly pro-environmental. Chevron decided last fall to more than triple the amount of money it's spending to lower its carbon footprint. They're going to spend $10 billion by 2028. It actually hurts their earnings that they're doing it. They don't care. And of course, the whole industry has made major changes to the way it operates, changes that are much better for the environment. But what do they get from the White House? Pure whiplash. 6 months ago, Biden was thrilled the oil companies had dramatically cut back their drilling. Good for fighting global warming. Now that the price of crude's going through the roof, Biden desperately needs them to ramp up production immediately in order to lower the cost of your gasoline. But at this time, his administration still wants to put the whole industry out of business, from what I can tell, over the long haul. Politics aside, that's not a good way to get companies to do what you want. Recent events have made it crystal clear that we need a thriving oil industry in this country, like it or not. Look, we never want to end up like Europe, ever, especially Germany, where they're now hostage to an extremely unfriendly neighbor, namely Russia. Believe it or not, the Russians have received more than $30 billion from the EU since they invaded Ukraine for energy. European energy purchases are more or less bankrolling Russia's insane war of aggression. All this is because Germany shut down many of its nuclear plants in an effort to go green, even if it meant replacing carbon-free nukes with carbon-intensive Russian natural gas. Do you really think Putin would have had the guts to invade Ukraine if Western Europe had its own sources of fuel? No way. Oh, and while the EU's partial embargo on Russian oil can certainly make some difference, their need for natural gas is a much bigger deal, and they won't lift a finger to jeopardize that business. It's possible Putin's stalling for time as he kills lots of Ukrainians, not to mention his own soldiers, waiting for winter when he can do real damage to Europe by cutting off the natural gas spigot. We never want anything like that to happen in the United States, especially now that we have 100 years worth of natural gas that we can rely on for our own energy needs. If we had the infrastructure, especially the pipelines, we'd have more than enough fuel to make North America totally self-sufficient on the fuel front. Which brings me to the second reason why Biden's relationship with the oil industry needs to change. If you ever want to see the price of at the pump to come down, we can't just rely on OPEC to help us. Saudi Arabia's not coming to our rescue. Nor can we rely on the endless drainage of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. We're already releasing 1 million barrels per day, and it's done nothing. Listen, I get why the White House has such a conflicted attitude toward oil. They want to fight global warming. Yay, that's an admirable goal. But they also know the American people won't put up with high gasoline prices, and the oil companies hold the key to pushing them back down. But the Biden White House doesn't seem to know how to break bread with this industry. Earlier this week, Biden published a piece in the Wall Street Journal where he talked about cutting down on inflation with alternative energy, not cooperation with the real producers of mass energy. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen just talked about unused leases. Well, why would these guys want to use them when the president keeps suggesting that they'll be out of business in the not-too-distant future? She says the canceled Keystone Pipeline wouldn't have mattered, wouldn't have made much difference. But it signals to the industry that they won't have the infrastructure they need to take their product to market. It's very expensive. Keystone would have brought heavy crude from Canada right to the refineries we designed to handle it. We now have all this refinery capacity we can't even really use with our lighter homegrown oil. We were importing crude from Russia earlier this year, for heaven's sake, simply because we lack the pipelines to get North American oil from where it's produced to where it's needed. You can't make it up. If Biden really wants the oil companies to boost the production, this kind of talk is not going to help. Why would the industry cooperate with a president who seems to view them as the enemy? Here's what our go-to man for all things energy says, Rusty Brazil. If President Biden were to start sending signals that oil and gas can be a part of a long-term solution, then these companies would be much more willing to drill aggressively. But if the president keeps hinting that they should be out of business in a couple of decades, well, he won't lift a finger to help get the price down. They won't do it. They just won't. They'd rather just keep printing money and rewarding their shareholders with handsome dividends. How could Biden signal such a change? He could propose raising the tax credits for carbon sequestration as an incentive to drill more. He could say that he recognizes the need for more pipelines in order to get natural gas to where it's needed, so the process must be streamlined. And he could encourage, with tax incentives, the development of more liquefied natural gas facilities that can be used to export this stuff to Russia, which is desperate for non-Russian fossil fuels, particularly our own LNG. Presidents talked about the importance of liquefied natural gas, but then failed to work with the relevant companies to make that dream a reality. This is tragic because more LNG exports could help end the Russian stranglehold on Europe while also alleviating the global energy shortage. But it won't happen because the White House can't figure out how to approach the oil industry, even as these companies are doing their best to become more environmentally friendly in order to appease a new generation of investors that actually cares about this stuff. I know there are competing interests here, which is why Biden's approach seems so confused. But this is a binary choice. You want to fight global warming with a real hard line against oil companies, or you want lower prices at the pump? Can't have both. The White House is trying to thread the needle, which is a sure way to alienate everyone. Bottom line, even if you think the oil companies are heinous enterprises bent on destroying the environment, we have no choice but to embrace them. Because like it or not, our economy still runs on oil and gas, both of which are too darn expensive without more drilling from U.S. producers. And that's simply not going to change by the time the next presidential election rolls around. Martin in Georgia, Martin.
Booyah, Jim.
Booyah!
Yes, sir. As a result of my brother passing away in 2020, I have an investment portfolio in which this energy refiner is number five in my positions, top positions. And you mentioned a couple weeks ago about investing with lithium-ion batteries. This refiner, early this year, bought a 16% stake in Novavoxx Limited, an Australian company producing lithium-ion batteries. And actually today they signed a letter of intent with another company to have EV charging stations. They also invest in hydrogen fuel cell and taking commercial grease from kitchens and turning into biofuels. Can we my question is, do you believe we can get our kicks out of having Phillips 66 in your investment portfolio?
I think PSX is an amazing company. I like them. I like Valero, too. But you're right. PSX is, again, one of these companies trying to do the right thing. Refines a dirty business trying to do the right thing. I think PSX stock is going higher. I think you have a good one. I'm sorry about the loss of your brother, but I got to tell you, you're doing the right thing for your family. It's the right thing. Jeremiah in Florida. Jeremiah.
Booyah, Jim.
Booyah.
Longtime listener. Happy to be on the show today.
Fantastic.
I'd like to get your thoughts on a company that recently hit their 52-week high. However, last week their CEO sold 30,000 shares. Diamondback Energy.
Travis Dice, the CEO of Diamondback Energy, is a visionary, and Diamondback is an amazing company that is certainly welcome in anyone's portfolio. Why don't we own it for my charitable trust? Because we own... We own almost every darn one of them. Can't run every one. But wow, FANG is a great company. By the way, that's the new FANG, Diamondback, not the old FANG, a term I created that I no longer use. All right, now, some may despise the oil and gas giants, and I understand that. But when it comes down to it, our economy is still dependent on them right now. And we've got to embrace them if we're going to get the price of gasoline down at the pump. There's much more Mad Money ahead, including my exclusive with Sentinel One. Pressure off earnings. Does a cybersecurity company have what it takes to defend itself in this market? I'm checking with the CEO. Then insider buying is one of the most important moves I track. And I'm reviewing a few companies that might be worth buying alongside some high-profile executives if you take a long-term view. And all your calls rapid fire in tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So stay with Cramer. In this merciless market, and you know it is, if you're not turning a profit, Wall Street's got no interest, even when we're talking about rapidly growing companies with exposure to powerful long-term themes. So take Sentinel One. That's that cybersecurity software play we've had on a couple of times. It came public last summer, initially saw its stock double. Wow. Where it peaked last November. along with everything else because the Fed got tough. Since then, Central One stock is down nearly 70% from its highs. And that's after the big bounce last week. Of course, this is all about the Wall Street Fashion Show, not about Sentinel. Business is solid. They just reported tonight. Results were pretty good. I think there was more positive than negative. Company delivered a top and bottom line beat with monster 109% revenue growth and gave excellent revenue guidance. Well, we also have to ask about cash flows and operating margin forecasts. I think this one's an important bellwether for a whole segment. So let's check in with Tomer Weingarten. He's the co-founder, chairman, and CEO of Sentinel One. Get a better read in the quarter. Mr. Weingarten, welcome back to Mad Money.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Jim.
All right. So, Tomer, you keep winning a lot of business and you keep getting more and more business and you say you're taking share. Can you describe who you're taking share from?
We're taking obviously a lot of share from incumbents. But today what we do, you know, it's such a broad based platform that we don't even just play in one market. We play in the endpoint market, in the cloud market, you know, data processing and data analytics. So we're taking share from a lot of incumbents out there that I think are getting antiquated with their technology stack. And with us, I mean, we're a cloud native platform. There's a lot to be had, a ton of market opportunity.
Tomer, when I take a look at Microsoft Azure, you mentioned that the Defender had a problem. You caught it. So obviously, you're taking some share there with Microsoft.
Yeah, you know, coincidentally, another vulnerability in the Microsoft product line today. And I think we're just seeing more and more customers getting completely disillusioned with Microsoft's ability to actually protect them. I think they need more investment in their own product set, in their own technology stack, improving security, operational security in that, and less focus on just security revenues. So all in all, it kind of feels like when people want best of breed security, they go to the standalone vendors.
Well, I've got to tell you, it's obviously a very important time for you because, as you say, on the day of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Sentinel Labs researchers reported a new cyber attack named the malware. That's when you said it was hermetic wiper. What I'm concerned about is some people say that the Russians stopped doing. We've heard that the Russians stopped doing cyber attacks since the war began. That's obviously not true.
No, it's not true. And it's been, you know, mainly confined to kind of the eastern, you know, part of the world, Ukraine and Eastern Europe. But I do feel, and we've seen it already, there are leakage points. You know, the Viasat attack was one of those. I mean, it affected customers all across Europe. So right now, it still remains to be seen. I do want to say that, you know, we're seeing less activity than we anticipated out of Russia in the cyber front, of course. But that can change. That can always change. So we're keeping a very close eye.
Okay, Sunil, I love the customer wins. I love the retention. I do want to know, because so many companies have not had stocks that go up because the cash flow may not be as strong or because guidance is for larger than expected operating losses. And you may fit that rubric. And I'm concerned that people will say, well, wait a second, the operating loss is too large. I can't own Sentinel One.
Yeah. I mean, look, to us, it's all about investing back in the business. The market opportunity is so big that for us, it really is about taking the cash that we generate. And we have ample cash on the balance sheet, you know, $1.2 billion. So overall for us, it's about grabbing more market share and really optimizing for the long term. And you see us hand in hand improving gross margin in a very, very substantial way, 15 percentage point year over year, operating margin improving 54 percentage points year over year. I mean, these are massive improvements. Our business is super efficient. We're investing back to grow faster and to grow and grab more market share, which, as you can see, I mean, incumbents are incredibly weak. That's what you want us doing as a growth company.
At the same time, I mean, how is that Attivo Networks acquisition working out? Because identity theft is incredibly important.
Yeah, I mean, look, the threat landscape has shifted towards exploiting users and towards identity-borne attacks. So that plays exactly into that, into that very wide gap that we see today for all cybersecurity vendors. There are not many cybersecurity vendors with the ability to protect identities. We're one of two. So that plays, you know, great into that narrative. It also fuels our growth. It's completely accretive. And also we kept our operating expense pretty much intact, the same guidance that we give, even though we're now operating as another company that we're integrating with It doesn't really touch our envelope for spend for the year. And to me, that's a big positive.
No, that's a great point. And it's one that I've got to be careful on, too. You did keep the guidance intact. And otherwise, you might have said because of the acquisition that you can't. And that is very, very important for people. I'm not trying to make excuses. I'm just saying that this is a better answer about why people are concerned, because they shouldn't be, given the fact that you made the acquisition, and the acquisition is accretive. Tomer Weingarten, the co-founder and CEO of Sentinel One, thank you so much for coming on the show, and
thank
I hope
you.
To see you soon. Remember, I'm trying people to like go over these situations where they're not making money, but they're growing very fast, so that you have a better handle on what you buy, so you're not bummed out when a company is losing money, stock doesn't go right up. Because a lot of them aren't. Mad Money's back into the break.
Just chill out.
Is this Chill Master J?
The Chill Man is in the house. He's happy.
The lightning round is coming up when Mad Money returns.
It is time. Some of the light round couldn't match our first one. There's only just heavily saying his name, Blanzio. And then the light round is over. Are you ready? Keep that time. The light round couldn't match. I'm going to start with Mike in Michigan. Mike, hit me.
Hey, Jim. This is Mike in Tampa Lake, Michigan. I have two stocks I'd like input on. The first one is InMode.
You know, look, InMode's a medical device company. Today, Danaher, which is a great medical device company, was upgraded, and the stock didn't even go up. What an opportunity. I'd rather upgrade your portfolio and go with Danaher. HB in Texas. HB.
Booyah, Jim.
Booyah.
Hey, man, I'm calling about Boise Cascade.
All right, now, Boise Cascade, this is one of those where it's now valued as people think it's going to have a doozy recession. It sells at 4x earnings. I'm a buyer of a stock that sells at 4x earnings, even though I expect those estimates would come down. Mark in Wisconsin. Mark.
Jim, I got a stock in the logistics sector, a trucking firm based here in Wisconsin. The ticker symbols MRTN, buy, sell, or hold.
Good Mark company, Transport. Makes things, does stuff, rewards shareholders, value reasonably, buy. Mike in Florida, Mike.
Jimmy Chill, what's going
Yo-ho.
On?
Man? What are you up
I
there?
I wanted to get your opinion on the company Doximity.
I've been wrong about Doximity. I felt it was the way to be able to get to doctors, to be able to advertise things, because that's what they love. It has not meant a thing. Why? It's not meant a thing because it makes very little money. And yet I stick by it because it's going to make a lot of money. Jacob in Florida. Jacob.
Hey, Jim. Thank you for taking my call. Love your show. Welcome. Appreciate your expertise.
Oh, thank you.
Question about AT&T. I have a large percentage of my investment in AT&T stocks and was waiting for the WBD spinoff. What is your projection?
Well, I think the spinoff was a really good one for AT&T, okay? They did cut the dividend, but it is good, and it makes them more focused, and it offloaded a lot of debt on this Discover Worldwide Time Warner. I mean, they offered so much debt to them, I can never recommend that stock. But AT&T is okay now. They got rid of a lot of debt. That's what I wanted. How about Megan in New York? Megan.
Hey, Jim. How you doing?
I'm good. How about you?
Pretty good. I just wanted to ask you what your thoughts were on Olaplex.
See, when I see a stock like that, I just say, why not buy Procter & Gamble? I mean, Procter & Gamble's down today. Somebody cut numbers. It was ridiculous. The company's doing incredibly well. We talk about it tomorrow on the channel, but at my 12 o'clock conference call for the people who belong to the CNBC Investing Club. That's the better buy. Ross in Texas. Ross.
Booyah, Jim.
Booyah, Ross.
I'm calling today to ask about IDEX Lab, IDXX.
But, you know, this is for veterinary. It's really been crushed. But you know what? I've got this Zoetis that Christian Peck runs, and she is so good, and that stock is so good, and that is the one to buy. And that one also is down 31%. That's a nice acquisition. Steven in Florida. Steven.
Hey, Jim. How are you this evening?
I am doing well. Jim, how about you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Jim, I was wondering if you could give me your take on a oncology pharmaceutical company whose symbol is VERU.
Okay, VRU is a very speculative situation, okay? They've got some possibly really terrific stuff for COVID, But it is very speculative and therefore not for me to recommend. It's up 100%. Let's go to Joel in California. Joel.
Jim, how you doing? Joel from Los Angeles.
Hey, Joel, how you been? How you been?
I'm doing all right. Jim, at this point, I feel like I'm stuck in a really bad marriage, and I just got so much invested. At this point, I don't know if it's worth it for me to walk away or just stay with it. I've read so much about avionics and aviation in the last 3 years, I feel like I should be leading the FAA. That would probably be the best case scenario for this company. I know you've talked about it a million times. I know you've left it. What's the deal with Boeing? We got some good news.
One day it'll come back. I just got tired. I'm upgrading my portfolio. I think that it's bottoming. But so what? There's so many better stocks. You don't need to own Boeing. And that, ladies and gentlemen, good of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade. Coming up, a new meaning to Intel Inside. And a tall order for Starbucks. Next.
When insiders sell their own stocks, it can have many reasons. Could be estate planning issues, divorce settlements. Maybe they just need cash for the down payment on a new house. Insider selling is never a positive, but it's not necessarily a negative. Sometimes it means nothing. But when insiders buy, they only buy for one reason. They think the stock's headed higher. They're going to make money. That's why I'm always so intrigued to see insider buying in some iconic companies. Companies like Intel, where three insiders have bought stock recently, including the CEO. Companies like CSX, the railroad. Centene, the health insurance play. Home Depot, which speaks for itself. Morgan Stanley. And, of course, the mother of all insider buying, Howard Schultz, the returning interim CEO of Starbucks, spending $15 million on his own stock. According to CNBC's own Robert Franks reporting, this may be the tip of the iceberg of the insider buying wave. What's the significance of insider buying to you as someone who's trying to figure out what stock to buy? Well, sometimes it confirms what you already know. I liked Home Depot going into this year, and I still like it. Same goes for the rails. Morgan Stanley is a key holding for my charitable trust. We'll make sure to cover it at our monthly investing club meeting tomorrow at noon. Centene's tougher. They lost their amazing CEO, Michael Neidorff, who was a real straight shooter and also had a huge heart, always helping the disadvantaged. But where the insider buying really matters are the cases where it changes your mind. For example, these purchases have made me more positive about Intel and Starbucks. Insiders can't sell their stock for 6 months after they buy it without giving up their gains. That's federal law. So you know none of these people are buying the stock right now to take advantage of something near term. These buyers are making a commitment for something big down the road. So what could these three insiders see at Intel? I think they're probably enamored of the work done so far by CEO Pat Gelsinger, especially since he himself is one of the buyers. I've often called Gelsinger an evangelist for bringing back American semiconductor manufacturing, not just designing chips, but actually making them here. He's spearheading a move to open up a gigantic plant. Oh, it's going to be a series of plants in Ohio, where he thinks he can develop a mini Silicon Valley in the Rust Belt. That plan needs federal help, which it might very well get, but he's not waiting for it, supposedly breaking ground maybe in July. That said, I think that Intel stock is the real driver. Gelsinger's got big goals, like returning Intel to its roots as the market leader, upending the new pecking order that sees NVIDIA and AMD as the top dogs in high-performance computing. Oh, don't forget, he can spin off the Mobileye. It's supposed to happen soon. Can he do it? Well, you know, I've had my doubts. I've said them. I've articulated them here on the show. The insider buying tempers those doubts, though. It makes me find the stock a little more compelling, 3.3% yield. The plan for Intel's greatness is a bold one, and it makes me feel more confident knowing the people running this show are putting their money where their mouth is. The toughest one to rationalize is the big insider purchase by Howard Schultz at Starbucks. Here's a company that Schultz himself just told you is lacking in many ways. He doesn't like the way the stores are set up, especially for the incredibly popular cold drinks. He stated that previous management failed to engage workers in a warmer, more rewarding way. That could put a little nascent unionization movement at Starbucks if he does better, but it could also hurt margins if Schultz has to pay people more to fend off the unions. Plus, Starbucks has a lot of exposure to China, which has become a very difficult place to do business thanks to the COVID lockdown, although that might be coming to an end. Of course, Howard's rich enough that a $15 million investment, it's not a gigantic amount for him. And if you think he's making a bet on himself, he's only running things temporarily until they find a new CEO. That said, again, Howard didn't need to buy a single share. I think he sees things he likes. I think he's going to take the hit with the workers, but at the same time reopen China. That, to me, says maybe you wait a quarter or even two until we get closer to these moves paying off. But also means if Starbucks keeps dropping, you might want to be a buyer, in large part because Howard Schultz is buying it, too. And if we get a couple more insider buyers like at Intel, I just tell you to buy it right here. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise I'll try to find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. The news with Shepard Smith starts now.